The Air National Guard has started accepting public comments on the environmental impact analysis for basing a squadron of F-35 fighter jets at Truax Field in Madison. Here's Governor Scott Walker in his State of the State address last month, praising the men and women of the Wisconsin Air National Guard and celebrating the prospect of F-35 fighter jets coming to Truax Field.
Out of all the states in America, we had the number one location. I'm looking forward to hearing the F-35s take off, because you know what? That's the sound of freedom. Congratulations to these outstanding men and women.
It is a conversation about the Wisconsin National Guard on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. First up, the timeline on the F-35 squadron. Meg Jones reports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She specializes in military and veterans issues. She's traveled to Iraq and Afghanistan embedded with the Wisconsin National Guard and reserve troops. She was also part of a team that was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2003. She's author of the book World War II Milwaukee. Meg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, before we get into the timeline for the F-35 squadron and the whole environmental analysis aspect, let's talk about the plane itself. What do we know about F-35 fighter jets?
Well, it's considered the fifth generation fighter for the military. F-16s are considered fourth generation. F-16s and the F-16s that are being flown by the 115th Fighter Wing in Madison were built in the mid-1980s. So these are the newest of the jets that are just kind of rolling off the line, and they're already in being flown, and they're being bought by they're made by Lockheed Martin, and they're being flown by other governments as well as America. But the thing about that is that there's actually three F-35s. There's an A, B, and a C version, and the A is will be used by the Air Force for just kind of conventional takeoffs and landings. The Navy will use the F-35C, and that features kind of larger wing surfaces and kind of reinforced landing gear for carrier landings for the Navy. And then the F-35B will be used by the Marines, and that will replace the Harriers, and that they'll be able to do like short takeoffs and then also vertical landings. So there's three different versions. The version that will be coming to Madison will be the F-35A, the conventional Air Force takeoff and landings version.
And what kind of missions do the F-35s do, the ones coming to Madison, differing from the F-16 or the F-22, for instance?
No. It's as far as I know, the 115th Fighter Wing will be they'll continue to do the same type of missions that fighter jets do. It's just that they'll get they'll just get newer vehicles, basically.
So you've been covering this developing story for a while. There was an announcement about 2 months ago that the F-35 squadron was coming to Madison. Take us back in time here. How did this come about?
Well, so I wrote a story back in 2016 when the 115th was one of like five, I think, finalists amongst Air National Guard units. And then about a year later, and they knew it'd be some that the final two would be that announcement would be coming sometime like this last December, which it finally did. So what this means for the 115th is it will be a one-for-one plane swap. So the 115th Fighter Wing right now has 18 airframes of F-16s, and they fly about on average 230 sorties per month. That one plane equals one sortie, and that's one sortie is one takeoff and landing. Mm-hmm. And typically what they do is they take off from Truex Field, and then they head north. And it's only about, I think it's only 5 minutes that they're at their practice site, which is up near Volk Field. It's a place called Hardwood training site, and that's where they can drop dummy bombs, or they can practice approaches. That's where basically where they do. So that was one of the reasons why the 115th wing was chosen by the military. At least this is what I've heard from officials, is that they don't have to expend a lot of fuel to get to their practice area, their training facility. So, and that cuts down on costs. Another reason is because the Wisconsin Air National Guard has an air refueling unit out of Milwaukee's Mitchell Field. That's the 128th Air Refueling Wing. And they fly these big KC-135 planes that have a big pipe that comes out the back, and then they fuel air-to-air. So that was another reason why officials said that it was likely that the 115th was chosen, was because there was already a unit nearby, basically a flying gas station that they could choose. So once it was announced in December, I think it was 21st, that that they were the two finalists, and I think the other one is South Carolina, I think?
It's Alabama.
Alabama. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now it's not a completely done deal, but it's pretty much a done deal. I mean, the military is not going to say you're one of two finalists for the two slots if it hasn't already done it, a lot of its due diligence. But
okay, but there is the environmental analysis,
yep.
Right?
Right. So they're doing that now, and that's going to take at least a year. So they won't get like final. Yes, it definitely is coming here. I think until sometime next year, once they've done the environmental analysis and public comment, just everybody will be able to get a chance to weigh in. And then ultimately the Air Force Secretary, Heather Wilson, will make the final decision, and that'll be announced next year.
Talking right now with Meg Jones. She reports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, specializing in military and veterans issues. We're discussing the F-35 squadron and its announcement back in December as the finalist of one of two locations for the squadron, basing it at Truax Field in Madison. What is your reaction to the F-35 fighter jet squadron being based in Madison? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What concerns or excites you about this prospect? What do you think about the environmental impacts? Will you be part of the public comment period? 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Meg, let's get into a little bit more about what these public comment period, how it works, where do these comments go, and what this environmental analysis will ultimately look like.
Well, I don't have the super specifics on that, but mm-hmm. I do know that the public is allowed to comment either in written form or there will likely be public hearings. And I do know that the Secretary of the Air Force takes all those into consideration. And then the environmental impact. So the thing about this is that people should know is that the base itself, the footprint, from what I know, it's not changing. It will still be the same area. I think that we really won't have to do a lot of major construction. Although I do believe they are going to have to get, they will have new simulators, because, as you know, the pilots have to fly. There's a minimum standard of amount of time that they have to spend in the cockpit. But not all of that is actually in the cockpit. They do spend time in simulators. And from what I understand with the F-35, they'll have to get new simulators for the F-35. And I've heard not everybody is happy about this. Some people are concerned about the sound, and they're complaining about the sound, and because from what I understand, the F-35 is louder than the F-16, though there's some dispute about that. But what the military is saying to me, though, is that they will likely fly fewer sorties, meaning takeoffs and landings, from Truax, because they'll be able to do more of their training in the simulators, so that there'll be less noise around the airport. So that's happening. So that will likely happen. But I visited Truax Field on Monday, and because I'm writing a longer piece for the Journal Sentinel about this, and talked to folks there, and as you can imagine, they're all very excited. They're pretty thrilled because they're getting the latest the technology. And it was kind of interesting when you go into the operations center, because the 115th fighter wing in various forms has been there in Madison since, I think it was 1948. It was just a few years after World War II. And on the wall there, they've got large pictures of all the planes that they've had there. So it started with like the P-51 Mustang and has gone through all up to now the F-16. But it's kind of interesting because they've got some space on the wall. So
They'll be adding a picture of the latest and greatest.
Of the F-35, yeah.
2 months ago, the Air Force announced that Madison, Wisconsin, and Montgomery, Alabama were the top two spots to base the F-35 squadron. An environmental review period is now underway for the military's newest stealth fighter jet, looking at everything from noise to wildlife and wetlands. A public meeting is set for March 8th in Madison as part of the public comment period. We're exploring the timeline, what this means for the Air National Guard with Meg Jones. She's a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter specializing in military and veterans issues. You can call in with your questions about the process at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to having F-35s based at Truax? What concerns or excites you? Call in or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll return to the conversation after a news update. Fighter jets generate as many as 150 decibels when using their afterburners. That's according to a study by Lockheed Martin and the military's F-35 Lightning Joint Strike Fighter program from 2009. Noise concerns are one of the issues some Madison residents have expressed about the news that the new F-35 fighter jets would be based at Truax Field. The environmental impact analysis is underway. We're learning about the process on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Meg Jones stays with us. She reports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, specializing in military and veterans issues. Getting your thoughts on the Wisconsin Air National Guard and basing F-35s at Truax at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have? Are you a fighter pilot? Can you describe your in-flight experiences? Call in or email ideas@wpr.org. Meg, it doesn't take too much digging to find some opposition to having these F-35s at Truax. And one of the big things that people are concerned about is noise pollution. What do we know about that issue?
Well, definitely the F-16s make a sound when they take off and when they land. But when I was at the 115th on Monday, I asked about that, and the 115 official said, "Well, we recognize that we live, you know, and we're based right here in a metropolitan area." So they said that they try to minimize the sound and the time that these planes are take off and leaving. And landing as much as they can while staying within, while continuing to be safe. But yeah, they are loud. But then, of course, there's also the civilian planes, and you know, the Dane County Regional is a very vibrant airport. So yes, it is very loud, and the F-35 is likely to be louder. But like I said, they're probably going to be flying fewer flights while using the simulators. But I have talked to people that are not happy about this. There's a Facebook page, mm-hmm. No F-35 in Madison, and it comes down to sound. That when the base was first built in the 1940s, Madison wasn't as huge as it is today, and now there's more and more encroachment. But for the most part, though, and I've done some research on this, Madison doesn't really have a very coordinated anti-F-35 effort. Not when you compare it to, like, say, Burlington, Vermont, where Burlington, Vermont, and basically it's kind of the same with the Vermont Air National Guard. They have about the same number of planes. They've got about the same size of an airfield, and they share their airfield with the civilian airport as well too. But their process started several years ago. They're supposed to be getting the F-35 toward the end of this year, and there was a very organized group, and they filed lawsuit after lawsuit and appeals after appeals, and but it's probably a done deal. Also, Boise, Idaho has a much more kind of a robust anti F-35 group. But ultimately, it's up to the military. I mean, they're gonna take in you know, what people have to say and what people are saying, and especially neighbors, but then ultimately decide what's best for the military and the community. So, yeah. So
let's go to Richard now, who is with us from Mount Horeb. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic today, as I am a veteran and I have experience with these fighter wing groups. Although I'm not in the Air Force, spent some time in Whidbey Island in the state of Washington, which is a fairly remote, large island in the Straits of San Juan de Fuca. This is going to be a problem in Madison, and what we're going to see is the government's going to come in and put these fighter wings in, and the next thing you know, its property values are going to start to plummet because people are going to be moving out because of the sonic booms. I'm telling you right now, it's something that you will not be able to live with. And my second question is, how is this being funded, and how is this good for the city of Madison and the state of Wisconsin? Because I'm under the impression the government's just going to come in and annex this property and have tax-free this and tax-free that. Seems to be the new norm here, isn't it? I mean,
Richard, thanks for the questions. Let's get Meg to respond there. Go ahead.
Right. Well, as far as I know, there's not going to be – the footprint's not going to really grow much – if at all, and the taxes that are already not being paid, that base has been there since the late 1940s. Now, what the 115th will point out is that all of the emergency services at the Dane County Regional Airport, firefighting, EMS, hazmat, that's all done by the fighter wings. So when there's an accident, or it just turned out on the day that I was visiting on Monday, there was a medical emergency by someone that was at the airport, it was the 115th that handled that. So if the 115th weren't there, then the Dane County taxpayers would be paying for, and you know, you could make the argument, well, we are paying for the 115th for our federal taxes, but that's what they're saying. So as far as I know, there shouldn't be much difference there, and I can't really foresee that there that property tax values would be down because there's fighter jets, because there's been fighter jets there, you know, since the 1980s. So I'm not sure.
Tom from Cedarburg called. He says it is a good thing to bring the fighter jets there. He's happy some military money is coming to the Midwest. Meg, can you comment on the cost of these planes, the investment in these F-35s?
Yes. Yeah. So the F-35, it's not a cheap it's not a cheap equipment. There are hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, it's kind of a moving target. I've seen $900 million or so I don't remember exactly how much these cost. And it is actually a program that's been fraught with delays. I know last fall Lockheed Martin delayed some of its flights because, or some of its deliveries, because of some production problems. There was some sort of corrosion around the fasteners on some body panels or something like that. But they're not a cheap plane. Now there has been some discussion about if the 115th had not gotten the F-35, would it have closed? And I've talked to people with the 115th, and they said, you know, this gives us longevity. You know, I talked to a woman who plans to, retire there, and she said, you know, I've got another X amount of years, and this means that the when they, you know, the military periodically does base reductions and closings, it's called BRAC, this would mean if they're putting the F-35 here and putting in all that effort that we would be less likely to be close. And I can tell you Milwaukee went through a BRAC closing when the 440th Air Force Reserve, that was a C-130, a cargo plane unit, that they got the BRAC notice in the mid in 2005, 2006.
Long and process.
And they got the notice when they were in Afghanistan. I mean, they're flying. So now and that whole area has closed down at Milwaukee's Mitchell Field. Well, they shared a spot with the 128th, but they've moved down to North Carolina. So whether that would have happened or not, I don't know, if the F-35 had not come here, because the F-16, they could have gotten old. They could have gotten more spruced up models of the F-16. But that's certainly something that was on people's minds with the 115s. And by the way, the 1,200 people work there. About 445 are full time, and that ranges from maintenance to pilots to, like I said, the firefighters.
Would the base expand with the number of people there?
No. Yeah, no, because they're getting a one-for-one swap from their mm-hmm. airplane. So it would be about the same amount of people. I know the Chamber of Commerce has issued some figures that it's about $100 million in direct through payroll, from the people working there. And then as well as the Air National Guard members who decide to go to college, that's money, GI Bill, that gets funneled through the UW system, MATC, and that kind of stuff. So there's definitely pluses for the F-35 coming here, but I'm sure there's also minuses as well too, because from what I understand, the F-35, this is the knock on the F-35, is that it's trying to be everything for everyone. Like how I just said, it was for the Air Force. They're building a model for the Air Force, and one for the Navy, and one for the Marines. So if it's trying to be everything for everyone, it doesn't work as well on its main mission as being a fighter jet. That's the sort of the knock on the critics of the F-35, and that the F-16 is a very elegant machine that was made during the late it was on the drawing board in the late 70s and finally rolled up the line in the mid 80s, but that it does its job very, very well. The only problem, though, is that every machine has a life. And eventually, your car, your boat, your plane is going to reach the end of this life. And this is what the military is saying, is that the planes being flown by the 115s are kind of reaching their natural end of their lives.
Well, Meg, as we wrap up here, what are you watching for in this developing story, in this news development? What happens next?
Right. So I'll be monitoring the environmental assessment and be monitoring all of that. I'll have a big story that I'll write. It'll probably be in next week's Journal Sentinel, maybe next weekend, because I'm still doing some of the reporting. Just kind of keeping an eye. It's the federal government, so things don't move very, very quickly. And as the folks that I talked to at the Truex Field on Monday said, we're excited, but right now we're focusing in on our main mission, and that's flying the F-16s maintenance, and there's a lot of other stuff. They've got an explosives ordnance disposal team there and firefighters. And they said, we're just concentrating on that because it's, if all the boxes are checked and everything, goes through, which is expected, these planes still aren't coming until 2022 or 2023. So it's quite a while. So they're like, this is great, and we've got a few people that are kind of working on this. But for the most part, everybody is still doing what they've been doing, since they got there.
Meg, thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Meg Jones reports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She specializes in military and veterans issues. She's traveled to Iraq and Afghanistan, embedded with the Wisconsin National Guard and Reserve troops. She was also part of a team that was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2003. She's author of the book World War II Milwaukee. Now let's take a step back and look at the history of the National Guard in Wisconsin and the milestones. Eric Killen is a retired colonel who spent more than 30 years in the U.S. Army National Guard. He's currently director of academic support at Wisconsin Indian Technical College. He wrote the book Images of America, Wisconsin Army National Guard. Eric, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's first get your reaction to the F-35 news, fighter jets being based at Truax.
I think it's wonderful news. I think it's a great win for the state of Wisconsin and for the people of Wisconsin. One of the comments I'll add to Meg's comments, she talked about the close proximity to Volk Field and the training ranges and the closeness to the 128th Air Refueling Wing in Milwaukee, which I think are aspects of why the Air Force chose Wisconsin. But I would tell you what I think is an even more important reason, and I think it's a testament to the service members in Wisconsin, is how well the unit itself performs. And I know that they did various looks at the performance of the unit from a maintenance standpoint, from their ability to perform their mission, from their education levels, from their retention levels. Everything personnel related, I think, is key to Wisconsin getting the F-35s. So I think the Wisconsin Air National Guard can be extremely proud of their airmen and their service members, and this is going to ensure that they're relevant and they have a mission for, I'd say, the next two decades at least to come.
So
there's one final comment, and I'll turn it back over to you. It's an aircraft that the U.S. has invested billions in, so they're very selective about who's going to get them. So, again, it's quite a testament to the capabilities of our service members.
So you're saying this is a really long process that goes into making these key decisions that Madison and Montgomery, Alabama, would be the top two spots for these F-35s?
Absolutely. I retired in 2016, and for a couple few years before I retired in 2016, there was units preparing for inspections and positioning themselves and trying to compete for the F-35. So this has been going on for years now. So this is something that not just Wisconsin, but states all over the country have been competing for and putting a lot of resources and emphasis on trying to get the F-35. So, again, I go back to the point that, yeah, the training ranges are important, but it's the people that got the F-35s to Wisconsin.
Well, Eric, civilians, certainly community members, have lots and lots of questions. And with your military background, I think you might be able to broach some of those. Let's go to Maureen now with a question in Middleton. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. My question is, does it not put us on the map for other countries, as a place that they'd like to then bomb, because they have these wonderful big, aircraft? I mean, doesn't that just make us a little target?
So Maureen's wondering if Madison becomes more of a target for other countries if these fighter jets are stationed there.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would make us any more of a target. Again, I go back to the earlier comments where we've had fighter wings and military units in the Madison area for decades. And this is just a natural evolution of the next stage of the military unit's equipment. It's a fantastic stage. It's the most advanced aircraft we have in the U.S. Inventory as far as a fighter jet goes. I don't think it's going to increase our vulnerability. As a matter of fact, I think having the most advanced equipment, and we have other measures too to protect our equipment, the security measures are going to be in place. So I don't think that's something that we should worry about or even concern ourselves with. It's no change from what we've done in the past. We're just getting newer and better equipment.
The Wisconsin National Guard consists of the Wisconsin Army National Guard and the Wisconsin Air National Guard. We're going to get into the history, taking apart the pieces of the Wisconsin National Guard that dates back to 1848. Eric Killen is a retired colonel. He spent more than 30 years in the U.S. Army National Guard. He also wrote the book Images of America, Wisconsin Army National Guard. You can join in the conversation about the Wisconsin National Guard at 800-642-1234. Are you in the National Guard? What led you on this path? What do you do in the Guard? What is your role? What's been your most salient experience? Join in the conversation or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation and the history of the Guard in Wisconsin right after this news update. Stay with us. The Spanish-American War began in April of 1898, and President McKinley issued a call for 125,000 National Guard soldiers, of which Wisconsin supplied 4 regiments, numbering nearly 3,000 volunteers. That's a snippet of Wisconsin National Guard history and retracing its origins on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Eric Killen is our guide. The retired colonel served 3 decades in the Army National Guard with 3 wartime deployments. He wrote a photographic history called Wisconsin Army National Guard with more than 200 archival images in the book that came out a few years ago. You can join in with your remembrances, reflections on the Wisconsin National Guard at 800-642-1234. Do you serve? Have you responded to disasters, emergencies, or overseas missions? Tell us about your connection to the Guard and its place in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Eric, let's take a trip through history and time and take us back to the origin of the National Guard in Wisconsin. How did it come to be?
Sure. Before I do that, let me take about 30 seconds just to kind of tell you what the Guard is currently, and that'll help you when I go back to kind of tell you how it came into being. It'll help you understand their current role too. So the National Guard today is the primary combat reserve force for the U.S. military, and it's unique, and a lot of people don't fully understand this aspect of the National Guard. It's unique in that it has a dual status. It has both a state role and a federal role. During peacetime, the governor controls the respective National Guards in each state and can utilize them for any domestic emergencies. The president also has control over the National Guard and can mobilize them for wartime contingencies. So that's the unique aspect, the dual role status of the National Guard, and it's the only military force that has a dual status such as that. The other unique aspect of the Guard that I have to mention before we talk about the history, and this is a key aspect of the Guard, too, is that it's the community connection that the National Guard brings to the public. The active military has a great level of trust and confidence bestowed in it by the public, but they have no community connection. And the Guard is vital, a vital link, and oftentimes people, their only exposure to military members are with members of the National Guard. So that's why the National Guard is key, and we need to make sure that we maintain bases like Truax Field and Madison with the latest and greatest equipment to maintain their relevancy, because that is the exposure to most Americans to the military. So now let's talk about the history of the Guard. I think because the Guard birthday is December 13th, 1636. So it's the oldest military service branch in the United States. It predates our nation's history by 150 years. Most historians, when they look at the National Guard, they attribute the Massachusetts Bay Colony and the government in Massachusetts in 1636 as the birthplace of the modern National Guard, when the government ordered the creation of 3 regiments for the protection of the citizens. So that's kind of how the Guard originally came into being. Now I'm going to jump to the 20th century because there's some things that pertain directly to Wisconsin and how Wisconsin Guard is, and I'll talk about the 20th century.
Yeah, please do.
The Guard as we know it today began in the early 20th century, and in 1903 was the first step that the federal government took to really formalize the National Guard as a modern combat force. And it was the 1903 Dick Act. It was named after a congressman from Ohio. And the Dick Act dramatically improved the readiness. It provided federal funding, federal oversight. It brought the National Guard in line with the regular Army. It stipulated this is how the Guard is going to be organized. This is how the Guard is going to be educated. This is how it's going to be trained. And the standards were the same as the regular Army. Another key element of the 1903 Dick Act is it provided the president the authority to mobilize the National Guard without the consent of the governors for up to 9 months. And it also solidified the National Guard as the primary combat reserve force of the United States. Prior to that time, there was no federal money and there was no authority. But 1903, that was the key date when it solidified the National Guard as the primary reserve force of the United States.
Was recruitment difficult in the early days in Wisconsin?
1832, if we go back to 1832, that's the earliest records that we have of National Guard units in Wisconsin. And there was approximately 600 members in 1832 that they had organized to fight in the Black Hawk War. Short answer is yes. The units supplied their own uniforms. They supplied their own weapons. They funded themselves.
Mm.
So a lot of times they needed militia, you know, in the 1830s, 1840s, they still referred to it as the militia instead of the National Guard, but they were not in a paid status. You had to supply your own weapons, your own uniforms. So you can imagine how difficult it would be to convince somebody, hey, we want you to join this unit and potentially go to war, but we're not really going to pay you or give you anything for that. So yeah, I would say early years of the National Guard, what they called in the 1830s and 1840s a voluntary muster system, where it was mandatory that every able-bodied male belonged to the militia, but it was a voluntary muster. If you didn't show up for the annual muster, nobody really went to look for you.
How has the size of the Guard in Wisconsin changed over time?
Currently, the size of the Guard is just under 10,000 in Wisconsin. It's been that way, you know, give or take a little bit for the last, you know, decade plus. There's about 7,500 Army National Guard, and there's about 2,000 Air National Guard in Wisconsin. Now, the Guard as a whole in the nation, the Army Guard is about 358,000, and the Air Guard is about 100,000. Over the last 20 years, the National Guard, along with the active component, have reduced substantially. When I joined the National Guard in 1985, it was almost twice the size of what it is currently. The active forces has the same reduction in numbers over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And there's been some call to increase the size of the active component and the National Guard recently.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the Army as a whole, if you combine the National Guard and the Army, is the smallest it's been in almost 75 years since the end of World War II.
Eric, we're kind of short on time, I want to get to this piece here in your book. Compiled so many historical milestones in military history showcasing the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Can you take us to one of those narratives? Perhaps it's World War I, where the Wisconsin Army National Guard played such a role.
Sure, absolutely. World War I was really the birth of the 32nd Infantry Division as we know it, the Red Arrow Division. Currently in Wisconsin, we still have the 32nd Brigade, which is the successor of the 32nd Division. 1917, U.S. declared war on Germany, entered World War I. We did not have any divisions, large units at the time. We still had regiments. We had witnessed the atrocious combat happening in Europe, trench warfare. So we decided we needed a division large enough to support itself and sustain the horrible attrition happening in the battlefields of Europe. So they created divisions that were 23,000 personnel strong. The 32nd Division was formed in 1917, and it went to Texas, Camp Waco, Texas, and trained for 16 weeks before it shipped overseas. It was one of, interesting fact about World War I and the role we played in it. When the war broke out, we had 200,000 soldiers in the Army. They mobilized the Guard and doubled that to 400,000. Eventually, the U.S. Army was 2 million strong. It was actually 4 million strong, but 2 million of them actually made it to Europe to fight. And 40% of the 2 million were National Guard soldiers. So that's the significant role that the National Guard played. The 32nd itself from Wisconsin, they fought in three major campaigns. They were the first Allied unit to penetrate, to break through the Hindenburg Line, and they were also the first Allied unit to set foot on German soil. They served a total of 16 months in France and Germany. Horrible casualties. They had 3,000 killed and 10,000 wounded. The French, who trained them initially and then fought with them side by side, were so impressed with the capability of Wisconsin's soldiers that they gave them the nickname, which still holds today, Les Terribles, the terrible ones.
The unit patch. And actually, yep. Gary in Glendale wants to get at that. Gary, really quickly, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'm sure you noticed that in the Bastille Day parade in Paris that impressed President Trump so much, the flag bearers at the head were wearing great war uniforms, and on their patch ahead of all the American units in the parade was the Red Arrow patch.
Eric Killen?
Yes, that doesn't surprise me. Again, that Red Arrow patch, for people that don't know, that's at the end of the war in November, the U.S. Army said all the units that fought select a unit patch to signify their unit, and the 32nd selected a Red Arrow penetrating a line, and what it signifies is that the 32nd penetrated every enemy line that it faced in the Great War. So it's a fantastic military history, something that we should never forget and that we should, as Wisconsinites and Americans, we should be very proud of the service that our 32nd soldiers did in World War I.
Eric, there is so much history and so little time. Thank you for introducing us to even a bit of it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Eric Killen is a retired colonel who spent more than 30 years in the U.S. Army National Guard. He's currently director of academic support at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College. He wrote the book Images of America, Wisconsin Army National Guard. Earlier in the hour, we spoke with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Meg Jones about the F-35 squadron. This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Dean Kennetter provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation about the Wisconsin National Guard, you find it on the Ideas Network.